They left the apartment securely locked behind them, because to do otherwise would only call attention to their leaving, and tied their packs to the horses Hawk had requisitioned from a nearby stable. Hawk sent Chance and Chappie back to their hostelry to pick up his horse and belongings, while he and Fisher went to make their goodbyes at guard headquarters. They studied the streets along their way with more than usual interest, the knowledge that they'd never be seeing them again, allowing Hawk and Fisher to see them with fresh eyes. After so many years in Haven, they'd become inured to far too many sights and sounds, and all the many familiar evils. It was time for one last crusade in Haven, one last chance for justice, retribution, and the casting down of the guilty. And to hell with what the law had to say about it. Guard headquarters was busy as always, with any number of colorful people bustling in and out. No one paid Hawk and Fisher any unusual attention as they tied up their horses outside, tipped a constable to keep a watch on them, because otherwise they'd have come out to find nothing left but their horseshoes, and then moved purposefully through headquarters toward the main stores. The storemaster wasn't happy about their unannounced visit and had demanded to see the necessary paperwork. Hawk had given him a hard look, and Fisher let her hand rest on her sword's hilt, and the storemaster decided he was needed urgently elsewhere. He left it not quite a run, and all the clerks at their desks became very interested in their work as Hawk and Fisher strolled casually through the stores, helping themselves to whatever they liked the look of. There was a lot to choose from. Guard scientists were always coming up with new ideas to help the poor souls on the beat survive another day on the mean streets of Haven. Hawk and Fisher loaded up with concussion grenades, incendiary devices, and as many throwing knives as they could carry. Hawk was particularly taken with the chaos bombs. They were new, very much untried and untested in the field, and as expensive as prototypes always are. But they were rumored to be quite amazingly destructive, and that was enough for Hawk. He stuffed all six of them into his belt pouch and looked hopefully around for more goodies. Fisher had to smile. Hawk always loved the latest toys. Even so, they quickly decided to pass on to the other latest development, drug bombs filled with black poppy dust. The one and only time guards had used the things in the field, the bombs saturated the whole room with poppy dust, and criminals and guards alike just sat around holding hands and giggling a lot until the effects wore off.
How about the new handcuffs? They're supposed to be guaranteed escape-proof.
I don't think so. First, I wasn't planning on arresting anybody. And second, the last time those things were used, they ended up having to cut the poor bugger out of them. I think we've got enough toys, Hawk. Let's go and hit the files room before word gets out.
Hawk nodded reluctantly, and they strode briskly out of the stores and down the main corridor. People took one look at their determined faces and hurried to get out of their way. The files room was currently enjoying one of its more accessible periods, thanks to a poltergeist that had moved in recently. The unseen ghost had a thing about order and everything being in its place. It wasn't an especially logical or useful order, but the general feeling was that some was better than none, and everything possible was being done to make the poltergeist feel at home. Hawk and Fisher headed purposefully toward the rows of great oaken filing cabinets. Digging out information on their chosen targets went remarkably quickly, and soon they had all the necessary information on where their targets could currently be found and details of their defenses. Outside the files room, Hawk and Fisher came to a sudden halt. Their way was blocked by a dozen armed guards, their weapons already in their hands. There was a long, tense moment as both sides considered each other carefully, weighing the situation.
Captains Hawk and Fisher, the day commander would very much like to have a word with you both in his office right now, if it isn't too much trouble.
And if it is?
He wants to see you anyway.
A sheen of sweat glistened on his upper lip, but the sword in his hand was steady.
We're to escort you there, and see you don't get lost along the way.
How considerate of the commander.
He and Fisher glanced at each other. They could probably take a dozen guards, but they didn't want to. The constables were just doing their job, so Hawk and Fisher nodded calmly and took their hands away from their weapons.
We'd be delighted to accompany you to the day commander's office.
The dozen constables immediately looked extremely relieved and escorted their charges down the main corridor. Not one of them put away his sword, though. The first real surprise came when Hawk and Fisher were very politely ushered into the commander's office and found not only the day commander, but also the night commander waiting to see them. Given how much the two men detested each other and how jealously each man defended his own territory, it was almost unthinkable to find them both in the same office at the same time. They stood behind the desk, apparently because there was only the one chair, and neither was willing to let the other sit in his presence. Neither of them looked pleased to see Hawk and Fisher. They both nodded pretty much in unison to the accompanying constables, who backed out of the room with almost indecent haste and shut the door behind them. Commander Dubois currently ran the night shift. Short and stocky and as bald as an egg, he'd been a commander for over 20 years. It hadn't improved his disposition one bit. He'd been quite a thief-taker in his time, but these days he needed a stick just to get around. Some years back, half a dozen thugs took it in turns to stamp on his legs till they broke. He was a harsh, intolerant man whose only saving grace was that he hated crime and criminals with a fine passion, and so was very good at his job. He glared at Hawk and Fisher from behind the desk, and Hawk and Fisher nodded respectfully in return. Looming over Commander Dubois was the tall, blocky figure of the day commander. Commander Glenn had just hit 50 and resented it fiercely. He wore a permanent scowl. His military-style haircut looked like it had been shaped around a pudding bowl. He'd been an army officer before he came to the guard and never let anyone forget it. Hawk and Fisher gave him a sloppy salute because they knew how much it irritated him. Still, seeing Dubois and Glenn together made it clear to Hawk that somehow news of their intentions had already gotten around. Nothing else would get these two men together in one room. Hawk supposed he shouldn't have been surprised. No one can hope to keep a secret long in a city like Haven, where information is often a life-and-death matter, not to mention money in the pocket. Now it just remained to see how much the two commanders knew, or thought they knew, about Hawk and Fisher's plans for a final vengeance.
So, you're leaving Haven. It hadn't occurred to you to come and tell us this? That there might be urgent arrangements we'd have to make, like finding replacements to cover your beat? Now, you know, as much as I am loath to admit it, you two are the most successful guards in this city. And your leaving will make one hell of a difference.
We thought we'd let our departure come as a nice surprise. Just think of the good it'll do your ulcers, not having us around to apologize for.
You can't go, you're needed here.
No, we're not. It's people like you who've kept us from making any real changes in this damn city. You've always been more concerned with the letter of the law than with the spirit of justice.
It's not your business to decide what is and isn't just. The whole point of the law is that no one person gets to decide what's right and wrong. That's why we have a council instead of a king.
The law is supposed to give people a chance for justice. But when the law is corrupt, drafted by the rich and influential to protect the interests of the rich and influential, when it can't or won't protect the people from those who would prey on them, that's when you need people like us. We're not infallible, but we're better than the alternative.
We know.
Dubois' two words surprised Hawk and Fisher.
That's why you can't leave. We need people who can be flexible in the cause of justice, huh? Guards the people can respect. You've both done a good job in your way, which is why we'll have a hell of a time replacing you.
We never quit. We never turned away from the job, no matter how hard it got. They crippled Dubois, and he still wouldn't give in to the bastards who think they run the city.
But what have you really achieved here? You've given your lives trying to get the city to act civilized, and it's as big a cesspit now as it always has been.
Well, now, if it's a case of money...
It's not.
Then how about a promotion?
Another surprise for the two guards.
We never meant for you two to be captains all your lives. Dubois and I always thought that one day you two would be ready to take over our jobs, and then we could retire at last. I might have given my life to the job up until now, but I don't want to die behind this desk. If you leave, where the hell are we going to find two more honest guards in Haven?
It has to be you. There's no one else we can trust.
We're needed more elsewhere. Somewhere we can make a real difference. We can't stay.
All right, what could we offer you to make you stay?
Not a damned thing. We don't intend to die here either. And like Hawk said, we're needed more somewhere else. So we're leaving.
And just what were you planning on doing before you left, huh? We've heard about your visits to files and stalls. Poor Rod Owen Files is almost in hysterics. We've had to send for his mother. According to him, you've seized confidential information on practically every main villain in Haven. And you've loaded up with enough weapons to start your own war. Now, if you're intending to take the law into your own hands and pay off some old grudges before you go, well, you must know we'll have to stop you by whatever means necessary.
You can try.
Fisher smiled. The tension in the small room mounted as Hawk and Fisher and the two commanders glared at each other, equally determined and unflinching. There was no telling who might have said or done what when the door burst open and the sorceress Mystique rushed in. Hawk and Fisher stared at the long, thick mane of black hair they now knew to be only a wig, and then they quickly looked away again, not wanting to be caught staring. The sorceress nodded briskly to the two commanders, either not noticing or politely ignoring the atmosphere in the room.
All right, I'm here. What is so damned important that the communication sorcerer has to nearly blow my head off with his urgent message? For a moment, I thought one of the family gods found out where I lived. So what is it? Are they rioting in the docks again? I don't know where they get the energy.
These two gods are under the misapprehension that they're leaving the city. You are hereby authorized to use all necessary measures to prevent this until we can beat some sense into their stubborn, thick heads.
You have got to be joking. I'm not doing one damned thing that might get those two mad at me, and neither will any other sorcerer you've got working for you with two brain cells left to rub together.
We're leaving headquarters now. If anyone gets in our way, we'll mail them back to you in a whole lot of small packages.
And never mind the golden handshake or presentation clock. I get emotional at those to-dos anyway.
They walked out of the office without waiting for any reply. The constables who'd escorted them in had long since made themselves scarce. The more sensible ones were hiding until it was clearly all over and safe for them to come out again. Hawk and Fisher strolled unhurriedly out of guard headquarters, and no one tried to stop them.
So, after all we've done for them, after all the times we've saved this poxy city, we're now on our own. No help, no backup. Just you and me against everyone else.
Best way. No complications or obligations. No clash of interests or conflicting loyalties. Just us against everyone else.
Us against the world. Just like old times, really.
They joined up with Chance and the dog Chappie at the deserted harborside by the docks as arranged. It was very calm now and very quiet. All the guards and all the strikers were currently licking their wounds at home and plotting new strategies. The only things moving now were the zombies, working endlessly, efficiently, unloading the ships and carting off the goods with calm, eerie precision. Up above, carrion birds filled the sky, soaring silently, drawn to the dead but unable to reach them due to the harbor's protective wards. Hawk and Fisher and Chance tied their horses up well away from the docks before they could enter. Just the smell of the working dead made their mounts put back their ears and roll their eyes. Chappie's eyes narrowed into slits, and he stuck close to Chance as he padded along the harborside.
I don't think the man's best friend contract includes walking around near zombies. Hey, a bone!
Tell me again this is a good idea. Just the four of us, against people as well-connected as the DeWitts seem to be. They're bound to have their own army of private guards.
Most of those are dead and injured after what happened here earlier. The DeWitts have undoubtedly sent their agents out to the local hiring halls to arrange for reinforcements. But they won't have had time to put together a real force yet. And they sure as hell won't be expecting more trouble this soon. They think they're safe from people like us.
And if you're wrong?
Then we walk right through them. David and Marcus have a lot to answer for, and nothing and no one is going to stand in our way.
The cold determination in Hawks and Fisher's faces and voices reminded him yet again that he was in the company of legends. At that moment, Chance thought he believed every word he'd ever heard about them. The cobbled yard before the DeWitt's business building held only a dozen private guards, uncomfortable in their new garishly colored uniforms. They did their best to look menacing, but barely half of them were holding their weapons like they knew how to use them. Hawk and Fisher drew their weapons and broke into a loping run, closing rapidly on their foes. Chance drew his father's axe and hurried after them, Chappie already bounding happily ahead. The private guards broke and ran. Hawk and Fisher chased them into the building. The two city guards kicked in the door as the last few sentries tried desperately to slam it in their faces. The guards huddled together to make a last stand, basically because there was nowhere left to run. But when Chappie came charging in, the guards threw down their weapons and put their hands in the air.
It's not fair! No one told me I'd have to fight Hawk and Fisher and a bloody wolf! They're not paying us enough for this! Hell, there isn't that much money in Haven!
I am not a wolf!
Chappie showed all his teeth. The guards huddled closer together. Chappie turned to glare at Chance as he finally caught up with them.
Tell him I'm not a wolf, Chance!
They'd be better off if you were.
The late champion's great double-headed axe had not been designed for running with.
I wasn't expecting prisoners, Hawk. What do you want to do with them?
We could feed them to Chappie.
The guards did everything but try to climb into each other's pockets.
Hell, I haven't got time for this. Shoo, the lot of you. Don't let me see you again, or I'll have Fisher fillet you.
Chance looked around the deserted entrance hall. If reinforcements from inside the building had been coming, they would have been here by now, which suggested there were no more guards.
Which way now, Hawk?
Beats me. We only ever saw the DeWitts on that damn balcony. The word is, they're still in here somewhere. So I guess we just kick in doors and generally terrorize people until we find them.
Amateurs. Takes hours to search a building this size. Get out of the way and let me do it. Won't take me long to sniff them down.
He raised his long head and sniffed ostentatiously at the air, then stopped short and frowned.
Oh, that's odd. There's something new in the building, coming this way. It smells like smoke with sulfur in it.
And that was when the thick gray mists came rolling down the entrance hall and enveloped all four of them in a multitude of thick, grasping strands, tenuous as cobwebs, but strong as steel. Hawk and Fisher lashed out, but the gray strands evaded their weapons with serpentine ease and lashed their arms to their sides in a moment. Chance did no better, and the gray strands all but cocooned Chappie rather than take any risks where he was concerned. Hawk and Fisher fought the enveloping strands until they contracted sharply, squeezing all the breath out of their lungs. After that, they just stood there, rocking unsteadily on their feet as they fought for air. Chance didn't waste his strength.
Chappie, be still.
He stood quietly, waiting for some opportunity to present itself. The billowing mists parted to reveal a slender, dark figure.
Mystique! Never trust a sorceress.
How the hell did you get here ahead of us? How did you know we'd strike here first?
Well, honestly, darling, I am a sorceress. I'm supposed to know things like that. Don't bother struggling. The mists are as strong as I think they are, and I think they're unbreakable. I really do apologize for this. It's not as if I want to be here, but the commander's threatened to fire me, and right now I need this job so I can look after poor Mumsy and Daddy. So, I'm afraid none of you are going anywhere. You're going to stay safely wrapped up in my clever little mists until you come to your senses, or until the commanders find some way to pressure you into doing what they want. They're really very good at doing things like that.
All the time the sorceress talked, Hawk strained surreptitiously against the mists, but there wasn't an inch of give in them. The High Warlock's axe would probably cut right through the mystic strands if he could just bring the weapon to bear, but his arm was trapped at his side. Hawk stopped struggling and thought about that for a moment. His arm was trapped, but his axe... Hawk grinned suddenly and opened the fingers of his hand. The weight of the axe pulled it free from his grip, and it fell toward the floor, tearing through the gray mists it encountered along the way. Mystique threw up her hands and collapsed in a decorous heap on the floor. Immediately, the enveloping mists began to unravel and dissipate. Within seconds, the captives were free again, as they swept their arms vigorously about them to further dissipate the strands of mist. Chance looked dubiously at the unconscious sorceress.
Does she often faint like that?
The mists are magical extensions of her own mind. When my axe cut through them, she felt it, personally. The magical feedback knocked her out. Just as well. She didn't really want to fight us.
They strode past the unconscious sorceress.
Come along, Chappie.
Chance dragged Chappie along when the dog wanted to stop and urinate on Mystique and headed down the hall, following Chappie's keen nose as he sniffed out the DeWitt's trail. Fisher leaned in close to Hawk.
That was a bit easy, wasn't it? Not to mention convenient.
She was faking it. Now she can report back to the commander that she did her best, but we were just too much for her.
Why bother with the act?
Because you can bet there are any number of unseen eyes watching us.
Hawk grinned suddenly.
Next guy who tries my trick on Mystique and expects it to work is in for a very unpleasant surprise.
They followed Chappie's nose along a convoluted trail, passing back and forth through the great building. Clerks at their desks watched with wide eyes as they passed, but made no attempt to raise the alarm. They stuck to their desks and kept their heads well down. Most of the rooms were empty. Chappie followed the trail out onto the balcony and back again, his nose very close to the floor now. He never once hesitated or looked confused, even when the trail finally ended at a broom closet. He snuffled noisily at the door, then stepped back, to look meaningfully at Chance. Chance tried the door. It was locked. One blow of his father's axe took care of that. Chance pulled the door open to reveal Marcus and David DeWitt huddled together like frightened children.
Surprise!
Come out of there! Don't make me come in there and get you!
Marcus DeWitt thrust forward one hand, holding out a zombie control stone. It flared up brightly. Chance fell back a step, clutching at his head. Chappie collapsed on the floor. Hawk and Fisher swayed on their feet as something rushed through their thoughts like an icy river, numbing their minds. But then it was gone, and they were themselves again. Hawk glared at Marcus.
What the hell was that?
The control stone. At this range, it can control any mind or body.
Oh, like hell? After all the wild magic we were exposed to, a simple geas like that is just water off a duck's back to us. Now hand that thing over before I make up my mind which of your orifices I'm going to stuff it into.
You may not be affected, but your companions are. They belong to us now.
Hawk and Fisher looked around sharply. Chance was standing stiffly, his face and eyes dangerously blank. Chappie was back on his feet.
Kill them! Kill them both! Now!
Chance stalked forward, and Chappie lurched toward Hawk and Fisher.
Ha!
Fisher threw all her strength against Marcus's grip and bent back his wrist until it broke.
Yeah!
She jerked the control stone out of his hand. Chance stopped immediately and stepped back, lowering his axe. Hawk watched him carefully.
Oh, damn. Damn, that was unpleasant.
Oh, right. Like having someone else behind my eyes, making me do things. I am gonna bite somebody's arse for this.
Get in line.
Hawk lowered his axe. He looked at the DeWitt brothers, both of them sniveling together in their hiding place. They shrank back under his gaze. Fisher studied the control stone thoughtfully. Seen up close, it seemed too small and ordinary to have been the cause of so much woe. Hawk reached into the closet, grabbed Marcus by the shirt front, and dragged him to his feet. He glared right into Marcus's tear-filled eyes, their faces so close they were almost touching.
How many good men and women died on the harbor side today because of you? How many were crippled or beaten so hard they're pissing blood? How many families will starve because you took away all the jobs, replacing men with your stinking zombies? You're worse than an assassin, DeWitt. You don't just kill men, you kill lives and families and hope. Why should they die? Why shouldn't you die instead?
Hawk raised his axe for a killing blow. Marcus saw no mercy in Hawk's cold eye, no mercy at all. Fisher moved quickly in beside Hawk. Though she didn't touch him, her voice was right there in his ear.
Don't do it, Hawk. He deserves to die. They both do. But Hawk, if the DeWitts die now, the docks will be paralyzed for months while their heirs fight it out over the will. You know how the city loves a good lawsuit. No work for the dockers, no food for the city. If the DeWitts die now, at our hands, innocence will suffer.
If the DeWitts live, innocence will suffer.
Hawk did not lower his axe.
There is another way. Not as satisfying for us, but then that's not supposed to be why we're doing this.
Hawk finally lowered his axe and looked at Fisher.
All right, I'm listening.
Chance studied them both as Fisher murmured in Hawk's ear. For the first time, he had seen true rage in Hawk's scarred face, and the sheer violence of it shocked him. He harbored no doubt at all that Hawk would have killed his helpless victim in cold blood if Fisher hadn't intervened. This man wasn't the Prince Rupert of legend. This was someone else, someone far more terrifying. And Chance wasn't at all sure how he felt about this new Hawk. This wasn't the man he'd come south to find, to save the Forest Kingdom. And then he was surprised to see a slow smile spread across Hawk's face as Fisher stopped murmuring and stepped back. Hawk took the control stone from Fisher and strode over to a nearby window. He gestured for the others to join him, and they did, including the DeWitts, after an admonishing glare from Fisher and a scowl from Chappie. They all looked out the window and down below, the harbor side and the docks spread out before them under the midday sun. It was getting uncomfortably warm now, but the zombies toiled unceasingly in silence, feeling none of the heat. Hawk held the glowing control stone aloft in his hand.
Instillo.
He sent out his will to the dead men working below. As one, they stopped what they were doing, abandoned their tasks, and turned away to walk slowly but purposefully into the sea. One by one, they vanished beneath the dark waters, disappearing in their hundreds like so many slow-moving lemmings, until there were no more zombies left anywhere on the docks.
They'll keep walking across the bottom of the sea forever. Or at least until something eats them or they fall apart. And just to make sure you two bastards don't get your hands on anymore...
Hawk opened his hand and let the control stone drop onto the floor. And as the DeWitts watched, disbelievingly, Hawk smashed the stone with one blow from his axe. Marcus and David DeWitt looked at the dust of their lost treasure. The only sorcerer who could have made them another was dead. They had invested all that wealth and made all those plans for nothing.
You'll have to deal with the unions now. After the way you've treated them, they're going to drive a real hard bargain before they let you woo them back again. Better tighten your belts, boys. Profits are going to be way down this year.
Things got bloody after that. Hawk and Fisher had their list of evil men and women and more than enough reason to go after all of them. They went where no guards had ever dared go before and brought death and terror to the city's predators in one fast rampage through the darkest parts of Haven's underworld. Villains who had long thought themselves above or beyond the law now discovered they were not beyond the reach of Hawk and Fisher and the long-postponed rage in their hearts. Chance and Chappie knew they were just along for the ride and mostly settled for watching Hawks and Fisher's backs as they brought their own savage brand of justice and retribution to those who had so long evaded it. Not all that long afterward, they hid, studying a first-class restaurant in the very civilized hub of the city, around which the other quarters revolved. Here resided the very best establishments for shopping, cuisine, and the latest fashions. Only the very richest shopped here, of course, and they saw private guards everywhere to keep out the merely curious. The crime rate ran astonishingly low here for Haven, because anyone who even considered making trouble there rarely survived to stand trial. This was the playground of the moneyed, the powerful, the fashionable. They liked their peace, quiet, and privacy. The incongruous foursome strolled unhurriedly down the pleasant tree-lined streets. The avenues spread before them, arrayed in all their finery like so many preening peacocks. The group observed their target restaurant from across the street in the concealing shadows of an alley mouth. As long as the team stayed close to a tradesman's route, they were, for all practical purposes, invisible, as the higher orders would never stoop to recognize a servant's presence. The restaurant seemed currently packed. Large armed men guarded the door to ensure that no one else so much as paused to read the handwritten menus in the windows. Surprisingly, no one objected to this. They knew who was dining within, though they pretended not to.
By God, someone in there knows what he's doing. I can smell every kind of meat there ever was, and a whole bunch of sauces so good they're making my teeth ache. Tell me we're going in there, Chance. I promise I won't bite anyone, unless it's a particularly slow-moving waiter.
We're going in, but not just yet. And when we do, feel free to bite anyone you like. Basically, just go for anything dangling.
You're my kind of guy, Hawk.
Is everyone in there a villain? What are they all doing together in one place?
This is where the heads of Haven's more organized crime get together once a week to sort out internal problems and discuss territory violations. All very calm and businesslike, enforced by a small army of bodyguards. You're looking at some of the wickedest men and women in Haven, and the most powerful. At their word or whim, people suffer and die every day. The guard have strict orders not to go anywhere near this place when these people are in session. They have enormous political influence. Hell, some of them are politicians.
Which is as good a reason as any for killing as many of the blood-sucking bastards as possible before we leave Haven. But we can't afford to drag this out. We go in, cause as much murder and mayhem as we can, and then vanish back into the alleys again. There's a lot of private muscle here, all of it well-armed. And even we can't fight an army. And since word of what we're up to has no doubt reached Glenn and Dubois by now... You can bet there are a hell of a lot of guards out in the city looking for us, with orders to bring us in no matter what it takes. Isabel, you still got those concussion grenades?
Oh, yeah.
Fisher reached into a pouch at her belt and brought out a handful of small silver orbs. She hefted them lightly in her hand and grinned at Chance.
They don't look like much, but these babies really are something special. We don't often get permission to use them because they're so expensive and difficult to manufacture. Basically, they're fragments of time and space seized from the heart of a raging hurricane, trapped in a magical shell, like insects in amber. A moment out of time, contained indefinitely. All I have to do is prime and throw one of these little beauties, and that restaurant is history.
Better make it two, just to be on the safe side.
You're spoiling me. Have you got the incendiaries ready?
Of course, and the chaos bombs.
I'm still not sure about those things. There's a good reason why they're still on the forbidden list. No one really understands chaos magic yet. And the one time someone tried to explain it to me, I had a headache that lasted all day. Those things are just as likely to take us out as the stupid enemy. Promise me you'll only use them as a last resort, Hawk, or I'm not going in there with you.
Fuss, fuss, fuss. Whatever happened to your sense of adventure?
What happened to your sense of survival?
Can we please leave the marital discord for later? You did say we were running short on time.
Ah, spoiler sport. It was just getting interesting. Doggy romance is much more practical.
I know what you do, but it never fails to disgust me. The High Warlock might have increased your intelligence, but he did damn all for your instincts.
Fisher chose one of her silver orbs and wound up for a throw.
Party time!
The concussion grenade exploded right in the front doorway, in the midst of the bodyguards. They just had time to see a quick silver glow and reach for their weapons, and then suddenly a hurricane was raging right there amongst them. The front of the restaurant disappeared in a moment, disintegrated by the raging winds, and the bodyguards were torn apart, blood and mangled flesh flying high up into the air along with broken bricks and scraps of wood. The winds died quickly away, with no real storm to maintain them. Then a ghastly rain fell upon the pretty streets. The rich and fashionable cried out in shock and horror as wreckage and offal fell from the sky. The unlikely four charged across the street, weapons in hands. They burst into the restaurant through the shattered front to find 39 crime bosses and their entourages already on their feet, pushing their chairs back from the tables and demanding to know what was going on. Hawk and Fisher hit them hard, throwing bombs and incendiaries around with wild enthusiasm. Fires broke out all over the restaurant, fanned and encouraged by the savage winds now surging inside the delicately appointed room. People went flying in all directions, some of them on fire. Several more took one look at Chappie and ran. Then Hawk and Fisher hit the first bodyguards, and it was all flying swords and clashing blades. One by one, the bodyguards fell, no match for the fire and fury that drove Hawk and Fisher. Chance did his best to guard their backs, swinging his late father's huge axe with deadly skill. Chappie ran happily back and forth, doing terrible things to the slower moving and defying anyone to stop him. The crime bosses quickly realized that their only hope for safety lay in numbers, and they backed away together to form a half-circle, bristling with weapons at the back of the room, from where they watched numbly as the last of their bodyguards were cut down. Fires raged uncontrolled all over the room, the last of the winds whipping up the flames around the dead and the dying, till what remained of the restaurant looked very much like hell. And the scariest things in that hell stepped over the last few fallen bodyguards and advanced on the crime lords. Hawk and Fisher, blood dripping from their weapons and bloodlust in their eyes. All those years of being ordered to turn their heads away from evil while the guilty went unpunished were finally over. Chance hung back. This was their fight, their personal vendetta.
Chappie, over here!
The dog trotted over, grinning with red mouth and teeth. Hawk and Fisher stopped just out of reach of the crime lord's weapons, and the two sides studied each other silently. The only sounds, the low moaning of the dying and the crackling of burning furniture. The fires were spreading. Soon the whole restaurant would be a blazing inferno from which no one could hope to escape.
Who I know!
Hawk looked at Marie Abhu, owner of a very profitable gambling house where the odds were squeezed until they screamed, and the only breaks a sucker got were the breaking arms and legs of his children when he couldn't pay. She knew Hawk and Fisher, and her eyes were hot with vindictive fury.
Why come after us now? You must know you can't take us all, and you can be sure the survivors will retaliate in ways you can't even imagine. You'll die. Your families and friends will die. Everyone who ever had a civil word for you will die, and you'll all die screaming in agony. Your names will become a curse on the lips of the city.
Yeah, you're right. 2 against 39 is bad odds. But we're in a hurry, and we're more interested in justice than in savoring our revenge. So for all those who suffered at your hands or your orders, for all those who bled or grieved or died because of you, we've brought you a little present. Go ahead, Hawk. Bring a little chaos into their lives.
Hawk already had the chaos bomb in his hand. a small golden orb dully gleaming, and quite possibly the most dangerous weapon he'd ever contemplated using. He'd heard all the horror stories, the terrible things that happened to the first few guards entrusted with the prototypes. What was left of them had to be buried in unhallowed ground, and some said you could still hear muffled cries screaming from under the earth mounds. This new version was supposed to be much safer, but only because no one had gotten around to testing it yet. Truth be told, Hawk didn't really care. He had vowed to punish as many of the guilty as he could before he left Haven, and this was his best chance. He tripped the primer and threw the chaos bomb at the crime bosses huddled together before him. Several flinched away, clearly expecting another incendiary. It wasn't what they got. The golden orb shattered, and something trapped within woke up and came out. No one there could tell what it was, whether it was a living thing or a force of nature or some magical construct. It was just too different, too unnatural to be easily defined by human senses. It spread out across the smoky air, an awful presence, unconfined by reason or logic, and everything it touched screamed. One man suddenly became a man-shaped mass of butterflies, which flew away in separate directions. It was almost pretty. The two men on either side of him melted and flowed away in thick liquid streams. The crime bosses started to scatter and run, but it was too late. Several slammed together in the growing panic and merged into one great fleshy form, with too many arms and eyes and mouths that howled in unknown languages. The changes spread quickly through those who were left, transforming the crime lords in awful ways, until even Hawk and Fisher had to look away. The last man standing was a grossly fat protection racketeer, his back pressed against the far wall as he watched the chaos do its awful work on his business associates. It is said that inside every fat man there is a thin man screaming to get out. Hawk and Fisher watched, despite themselves, as the fat man suddenly split apart from throat to crotch, blood flying thickly on the air, as a thin, bony hand emerged from inside the great crimson rent. First the hand, and then an arm, and finally a shoulder emerged from his dripping guts, the thin man tearing the gross bulk apart in his eagerness to be free. Bones broke and fat tore until finally a terrible thin man stood in a pile of discarded guts and skin. Chance had to fight to keep from vomiting. Chappie pressed close against him, tail clamped between his back legs. Fire roared around them, consuming what was left of the restaurant. Fisher looked at Hawk.
Oh, did even they deserve that?
I don't know. If you like, we can ask some of their victims before we leave.
Fisher looked uneasily about her. She could feel the unnatural presence still coiling and writhing on the air, unsatisfied and beyond any control they might have had over it.
Hawk, that shit doesn't look like it's interested in dispersing. If anything, I'd say it's spreading and heading in our direction. Time we were leaving, I think. In a hurry.
You're probably right. Any idea what the range on that thing is?
Don't ask me. You're the one who reads up on these things.
Shut up and run.
Outside the restaurant, a crowd had gathered to watch.
Get out of here!
Get back!
Save
Get
yourself!
Away! Get back!
The fashionable people took one look at the bloodstained weapons in their hands, then the expression on their faces, and did as they were told. Hawk didn't stop running until he was safely back in the alley mouth on the other side of the street. Hawk and the team looked back.
Tell me, have you people ever heard of the word overkill? I mean, I've seen forest fires that do less damage than you two.
Well, I'm impressed.
Really?
Can we go now? If whatever you let loose in that place isn't limited to the restaurant, I, for one, am heading for the nearest horizon and not looking back till I'm in a different country.
Agresia!
Hawk was about to say something cutting when the whole restaurant vanished, leaving only a great hole in the ground where the foundations had been. Hawk blinked a few times.
It would appear the Chaos Force has gone back to wherever the guard sorcerers got it from and taken the restaurant with it.
Good riddance. Now let's get the hell out of here. One of the people we were looking for wasn't there, and we can't leave Haven without saying goodbye to him first.
Oh, hell. Haven't you killed enough people for one day? How much will it take to satisfy your need for revenge?
You'd be surprised.
Something in the guard captain's voice made Chance decide not to say anything else. Hawk looked broodingly at the great hole in the ground.
One man wasn't there, the greatest villain of them all. He never gets his own hands dirty, but he takes a cut from everyone else's business in return for financing their various schemes. A great fat leech feeding on the blood of the city.
Saint Christoph. He has a personal army of over 400 men, and a mansion better protected than guard headquarters. We were hoping he'd be here with the other scumbags, but apparently he's too important these days to appear in person. So, I'll have to go after him the hard way.
Hold everything. There is no way the four of us are going to fight our way through an army of 400 men, damn it. I don't care what the legends say you did. And Hawk, if you even look like you're thinking of unleashing another of those chaos bombs, I'm going to knock you unconscious for yours and everybody else's good.
Well, you could try, but you're right. No more chaos bombs. Not until I have a much better idea what their limits are. And we'd never fight our way through 400 men to reach St. Christoph. So we'll just walk up to his front door and demand to see him. He'll let us in because his pride won't let him do anything else. And then we'll have him.
And just how do we get out afterwards? You know, past the 400 armed men?
Oh, we'll think of something. In fact, I think we ought to take a little present with us. A little something for St. Christoph's personal bodyguards.
Of course. I have just the thing in mind. We'll pick it up along the way.
Chance looked at Chappie.
We are dead. Very, very dead.
Chance didn't know where he'd been expecting to stop off to pick up St. Christoph's little present, but a sewer opening sure wasn't it. Hawk levered open the heavy iron grill with the edge of his axe.
Hello?
Several appalling odors wafted up into the street. Finally, a gray and grimy head appeared through the sewer hole, and the smell in the street was suddenly worse, much worse. Chappie retreated, and Chance felt very much like doing the same, but Hawk and Fisher held their ground, so he had to as well. Hawk nodded amiably to the grimy head, which smiled pleasantly in return.
Greetings, captains! Isn't it simply a lovely day?
So it is. Chance, this is Gently Northampton. He knows the sewers under Haven better than anyone.
Sewers are my life.
Gently blew his nose on a filthy handkerchief that Hawk wouldn't have touched with two pairs of gloves on, and then smiled again.
You can't beat the sewers for a bit of peace and quiet. No one bothers you. I haven't paid taxes for years. Though you'd be surprised what you can find down here some days. We had to block off the tunnels under Major's court. I don't know what those magicians have been up to, but there's something big and white in the passageways now, and it's giggling. We had to call in the SWAT team. Mind you, the sewers under the East End are lovely this time of year. There's flowers there as beautiful as anything in the gentry's gardens. And of course, they eat the rats, which keeps the numbers down.
Fascinating. As always, Gently, did you get our message about what we need?
Certainly. Anything for you, captains. One bag full as requested.
He handed up a large cloth sack that writhed and bulged ominously. Fisher took the sack, tested its weight with one hand, and grinned unpleasantly.
Thank you, Gently. That will do nicely.
Time to go see St. Christoph.
Enjoy the party favors! See you in the bones!
Gently's head disappeared back into the sewers. Hawk levered the iron grill back into place and stamped it down.
Then can we please go back to the forest? I didn't feel this threat during the Demon War.
Some people just don't know how to have a good time.
Fisher eyed the bulging, kicking sack.
But we do. Come on.
St. Christoph's mansion was reputed to be the single largest personally owned residence in the city, and Chance could quite believe it. Four stories high and what looked like several acres wide, it dominated the quiet residential area. The thick stone exterior walls were topped with iron spikes and broken glass. The only entrance into the grounds was a great stone archway that featured not only a lowered steel portcullis, but also a half a dozen heavily armed private guards. They took one look at who was approaching them and immediately sounded a general alarm. Hawk strolled unconcernedly up to the steel bars of the portcullis and smiled charmingly.
Well, I see you know who we are. Just once, what say we do this the easy way? We're here to see St. Christoph. You let us in, or else.
The dubious though nervous leader of the private guards looked over Hawk's crew.
Or else what?
Or else we'll improvise. Suddenly, violently, and all over the place.
The guard leader thought about that. Technically speaking, he was perfectly safe behind the thick steel weight of the portcullis, but this was Hawk and Fisher, plus someone with a big axe and a wolf. He looked unhappily at Chappie for some time and then decided this was all too much for him.
Stone, go up to the big house and find out what they want us to do. On the double!
Everyone else stood around and smiled patiently for a while. Fisher hefted her sack now and again to keep it quiet. Finally, a butler turned up in full frock coat and powdered wig.
Open the gate. I shall escort the captains and their entourage to the master.
The private guards looked at each other, took it in turns to shrug unhappily, and then did as they were told. The heavy steel bars rose, and Hawk and Fisher sauntered through the archway like they owned the place. The butler bowed briefly and then led the way up a raked gravel path that meandered through the extensive lawns and gardens. None of them looked back. The butler's pace was nicely judged to suggest his master's impatience, while at the same time slow enough for the company to be impressed by the specially imported trees and flowers and the exquisite landscaping. And then Chappie spoiled it all by chasing a peacock. And coming back with a mouthful of feathers.
Good heavens! Have you any idea how rare and expensive those birds are? I'll have that wolf killed, stuffed, and mounted!
In an instant, the man found himself on his back, Chappie's paws on the man's vest, his snout on the man's nose.
I'd like to see you try your poor excuse for a
Chappie,
fop!
Chappie, let the man alone. I'm certain he didn't mean it. People just get carried away sometimes.
Well, I know where I can carry him away to.
The butler dusted off and led the party the rest of the way in dignified silence, pretending nothing at all had happened. At the front door, he passed them over to the head butler, resplendent in a uniform finer than most admirals, and he led the party down a great hall lined with ancestral portraits and two silent lines of armed men, and finally into a dining room, where St. Christoph sat at a feast. He sat at the end of a long table of heavy mahogany, all but bowing under the weight of so much food. There was enough provender at that table to feed a dozen families, but St. Christoph was the only one eating. He dominated the room with his malign presence, his huge bulk contained in an exquisitely tailored suit of dazzling white, the only color a single blood-red rose on his lapel. St. Christoph might have stood over 6 feet tall. He weighed 450 pounds if he was an ounce, but rumor had it he carried a lot of muscle under all that fat. Rather more disturbing rumors asserted that he got that big by eating his enemies. His great round face shone blank, almost childish. His features stretched smooth by his fat until he bore the enigmatic brooding look of an oversized baby. His gaze fell flat, unwavering, and full of calm menace. He wore no weapons. It had been a long time since St. Christoph fought for anything but his own pleasure. He left the necessary brutalities of his business to the 12 female bodyguards who went everywhere with him, each of them naked but for her sword belt. The women were reputed to be the 12 deadliest fighters in Haven, every one of them undefeated. Hawk and Fisher made a point of ignoring them and concentrated instead on the sumptuous furnishings and fittings of the dining hall. Hawk was particularly taken with the massive steel, glass, and diamond chandelier hanging overhead. There were no visible supports, which suggested it stayed aloft by some hidden magic. An expensive whim for something so monstrously tacky. St. Christoph casually threw a scrap of meat to one of his bodyguards. She caught it neatly on the point of her sword, conveyed it to her mouth, and chewed it calmly, all without once taking her eyes off the new visitors. Chappie sneaked up behind one of the bodyguards and stuck his cold nose against her bottom. She tried very hard to look as though she hadn't just squealed. Chance didn't know where to look. Spending most of his life in an all-boys private school had done nothing to help him deal with so much female nudity. He found it all very distracting, but he was still smart enough to realize that was the point.
So, captains, what could be so important that you must disturb me at my repast?
Oh, nothing much. We're just here to kill you, burn down your house, and cripple your extensive criminal operations. We're leaving Haven, you see, so we won't get another chance. You should be flattered, Christoph. We saved the best for last.
Insufferable as ever, Captain Hawk. Must I remind you that I am a perfectly respectable businessman with no criminal record of any kind? The law has no interest in me.
We're not the law anymore. We answer to a higher cause. How many lives have you ruined over the years, Christoph? Do you even know?
Of course not.
The big man delicately patted at his rosebud lips with a monogrammed silk napkin.
I have people who keep track of such things for me. I really have no interest in continuing this conversation, Captains. Because of my admiration for your many exploits, I offer you this one chance. Leave my home and this city and never look back while you still can.
Good thinking having nude women as your bodyguards. Men are so easily distracted by things like that. I, on the other hand, am not. So I considered the problem dispassionately and decided to bring your bodyguards a little present or two.
Fisher undid her sack, upended it with a flourish, and out of the sack dropped 20 of the foulest, fiercest, hugest, and most vicious sewer rats to be found in all of Haven. They all hit the floor running, mouths snapping, and went straight for the nearest undefended food, in this case, the dozen sets of bare female feet. The bodyguards scattered in disarray and confusion as the rats bit at their feet and tried to run up their legs. One rat made the mistake of going for Fisher. She casually booted at the length of the room. St. Christoph surged to his feet, a squat giant in blinding white. He snatched a sword from a bodyguard as she ran past him with a rat rooting in her hair. Hawk and Fisher drew their weapons and advanced on him. Chance slammed the only door shut and wedged it with a sturdy chair. Chappie, meanwhile, was having a fine time chasing the darting rats and female bodyguards with equal glee. Hawk and Fisher closed in on St. Christoph, who wielded his sword with surprising strength and speed, parrying their every blow. He moved impossibly quickly for one of his great bulk, and there was real power in his attacks. Try as they might, Hawk and Fisher couldn't pierce his defense, even when they came at him from two different sides at once. St. Christoph backed slowly away as Hawk and Fisher pursued him, not even breathing hard. Servants and guards were already hammering on the other side of the door Chance was guarding. Hawk and Fisher fought well and hard, but it had been a long day and they were tiring fast.
You can't win. The best you can do is arrest me. And my lawyers will have me out in under an hour. There won't be any trial. I am protected on levels you can't even imagine. You're just the city's attack dogs, and I have the means to muzzle you. Leave my home, or die here.
I knew you'd say something like that. You think we can't touch you, and you're wrong.
He threw his axe at the point where the massive chandelier hung from the ceiling, and the rune-etched blade sheared through the simple magic supporting all that weight. The immense weight of crafted steel and glass and diamonds came crashing down and smashed him to the floor. Christoph lay pinned beneath the chandelier, only his head and one hand showing. He tried to force himself up, throwing all the strength of his great bulk against the weight holding him down, and for a moment the chandelier actually moved, but it was only shifting its mass. The chandelier pressed him even more firmly to the floor. Those female bodyguards, not immediately concerned with fighting off sewer rats, stood watching numbly, bemused by a sight they'd never thought to see. Chance backed away from the closed and wedged door, sword in hand. Chappie came to join him. St. Christoph glared up at Hawk and Fisher.
My people will break through soon. They'll free me, and then you'll die slowly and horribly for this indignity. Because I'm St. Christoph, and you're nobody.
Shows what you know.
Hawk reached out and retrieved his axe from among the glass and diamonds of the chandelier and hefted it thoughtfully. And then he raised it with both hands. The heavy steel blade sheared clean through St. Christoph's thick neck and buried itself in the floor beneath. The head rolled away across the floor, still wearing its last expression of outrage and surprise. Hawk watched the head roll until it finally came to a halt, and then nodded, satisfied.
I have to say, that wasn't exactly honorable, was it?
It sure as hell is. In Haven.